Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Everywhere I look, I see people taking amazing actions in order to bring as much normalcy as possible to their world. I've noticed two things that have got me thinking a lot and are the subject of this week's Smart Thinking Podcast. I've noticed that people are just in a weird haze. We are now in the seventh month of dealing with a global pandemic, and people seem to be in one of two moods. They're either witty or they're wilting, and we bounce back and forth between them. We also seem to be unable to see past the short term, and that is pretty normal. We can't predict 2 weeks from now, and we are constantly seeking short-term bits of normalcy. As discussed in a previous podcast, we should be celebrating those minutes of normal. The second thing that has my reflective wheel spinning is how I am seeing people acting in their lives and organizations. Short-term goal setting, which seems to be so unnatural because we're just trying to get day-to-day, and that's not normal. And I hear people say things like, we just need to get to Friday, and then we can just reset. As long as I don't get corona before the wedding, as long as I'm healthy until this specific date, as long as I can make it to a point in time. We have evolved, seemingly, to short terms of optimism, daily buffaloing, and shifting away from the long-term planning to become swift and reflective strategic mindset practitioners. The average person is now feeling the pressures normally placed on high levels of organizational leadership and having to make decisions in the split second, not knowing what the consequences will be. And this quick thinking is increasing pressure, leading to more stress and creating gaps in our confidence. So this week, I want us to do some smart thinking on two strategies that can be employed in any environment, from home to work and from teams to self. One is for you and those you work with, live with, or serve with, and the second is a tool for all of them. As always, I have to share a little story for you to help us frame our thinking and remind you of two things. We operate in a mindset that we optimistically charge in every situation with a blinding optimism that contagiously inspires others. We buffalo. We also recognize that every leader is influencing others with every action and decision, so we operate on two footings, empathy and reflection. How will this impact those within my influence, and how can I change to help them? I'm often called to work with teams of people who are struggling as a group to see their collective purpose. I find that many times these groups have a tremendous amount in common, but fail as a group because of misalignment. They either are holding on to grudges, don't understand how to talk to each other anymore, or have grown defensive because of the stories they've contrived in their minds. This can cause significant paralysis in an organization, especially in a pandemic when we need to move swift. A consequence of these groups evolving to this level of disconnection is that they cast blame, they won't take risks, and they are unlikely to meet the mission. Who wants anything to do with this? But it is more common than uncommon, and that is the problem that I keep rediscovering when working with people. They don't see what they have in common, and they don't commit to it. Instead, they commit to the things about each other they don't have in common. Oh, she likes country music, but I'm more rock and roll. Yeah, but you both like music. Can we start there instead of the differences? In times of crisis, this seeing differences just compounds and quadruples stress and pressures. A few years ago, I was called in to support a leadership team in a nonprofit, and I was simply dumbfounded listening to where they had evolved and how they refused to solve. Here's what happened. A team of about six people ran an entire nonprofit, and they were in charge of this wonderful organization that had an amazingly impactful mission. I mean, like, they changed people's lives in an instant. Their board president called me and explained what was going on. Basically, all of the team members could not be in a room together without reverting to complete passive-aggressive behavior. They sat and stared aggressively at the boss and spoke little in her presence, and as a result, they were significantly underserving their mission. This group worked with people who were at absolute rock bottom, and the nonprofit was annually reducing the amount of people they served. The board president said that the board liked and admired each of the six leaders, but if something didn't change, they were afraid they'd actually have to close this nonprofit and service. I learned a while ago in my Six Sigma training to put my eyes on the problem, so I told the president that I'd like to spend a morning with the group and watch the flow and behavior. I walked into the building and was warmly greeted by each person. I made some typical Ted dumb dad jokes and people seemed jovial. And my first impression was that the six people he was talking about must not yet be here. I introduced my task. They had a little table set up for me in the corner, and I sat there for 3 hours just observing. People who were in significant need came in the front door, and they were warmly greeted, walked through options, given the needed goods to get them through a couple of days, then met with a specialist, and everyone seemed to truly have ownership in what was going on. When a client was in the room, everyone was cheerful, hopeful, endearing, and just plain old lovely. Again, I sat there confused. I actually looked back in my old notebook as I prepped for this episode, and the first page said, "High-performing team, board has a misconception." At noon, the team took me to a little conference room, and I sat in the middle of the table with all of the members of the team around me. Oh, remember when you could do that? Anyway, I had my notebook, and the part of my day that was next kind of blew me away. Because it was then that I realized, I think I just stepped into Dr. Jekyll's lab. The executive director handed out the agenda, and each member took it and made no eye contact, not with anyone. Usually in an organization, I can tell where all the alliances fall by watching people make their first glance. You know, the two people who look across the table with their "here we go again" look? Nope, not once. Nobody even looked at each other. The director walked through the agenda, asked for input, received none at all, and then she ended the meeting after just 23 minutes. Now, I know you just heard two things. No one said anything. And wait a minute, there are 23-minute long meetings? Yeah, but let's focus. They went to their desks and ate independently. No noise, no music, no talking, no joy. Then at 1 o'clock, they unlocked the doors and it started all over. They all acted like they were in love. What I did next, I've never done before when doing an observation. I left. Yep, I was like, yikes, what in the world did I just experience? And how powerful could this group be if they worked together from a place of care for both each other and those they served? It reminded me of when I was a kid and my two brothers and I would be in the back seat of the car and we were fighting amongst ourselves all the way to my grandmother's. This led to my parents being irritated, and when we'd pull up to my grandmother's house, my dad would turn around with that well-rehearsed fatherly rage look and he'd say, "Knock it off! And when we get in there, we're a happy, loving family." And then for the next 3 hours, my brothers and I would pretend we just didn't try to kill each other in the back seat on the way down. I left, and I took a walk. I was scheduled to debrief with the team and the board officers at the end of the day. I opened my phone. Yes, you heard that correctly. My sweet Motorola Razr phone. I flipped it open, and I called the board president and told him the meeting's off. A little more about his team. Every day, they came together to serve people who were experiencing significant trauma. This made it traumatic for them, and as a result, they were hypersensitive to many things. Anyone who has had life trauma can explain all the ways they have felt pain, struggled, felt betrayed, and they can describe in great detail how the world hurt when they were living through it. As a result, this group had evolved into an angry and resentful team focused on surviving when they were serving. This is my canary in a coal mine moment for you, for us. Pay attention to what's going on around you. My school friends are walking into the door of school and are afraid of a lot of things. It's traumatic, and it can lead to a slow callousing of your tolerance for others. What used to be cute and funny may cause rage now, and when this starts to creep in, we have to recognize it. We need to remind ourselves of our collective commitments. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. You're in your classroom, and there's a knock at the door. Someone asks you to step into the hall, and they tell you, "Hey, your entire class and you may have been exposed to COVID, so no one can leave, and we're currently calling all of the parents to pick the kids up. Please share that with the students, but continue to instruct. And oh yeah, go tell the aide in the back of the classroom as well, but don't create panic." Everyone in that narrative is in a highly elevated emotional moment, and it is here that we need to support each other, or else we end up coming through all of this frustrated with each other, holding grudges, and unwilling to work in the future with each other when we do return to the new normal. That's the reason when I was on the phone with the board president, I told him not to come to the meeting. I had to go back to the team and base them, get them to see what I saw, an amazing group of individuals who could do great work, but were prohibiting each other from doing so as a result of whatever had happened. As I share what I did next, I want you to think about how you, You could proactively do this within your own group. So don't wait till it's all gone sideways. Start now. As I share what I did next, I want you to think about how you could proactively do this within your group. At the end of the day, the board had instructed the team to plan to stay for an extra couple of hours to hear my strategies for consideration. The board had a meal catered, and when I arrived, they were all back in the same spots in that boardroom, looking at their food like zombies, and not at each other. There was an overwhelming feeling of defeat in the room. I sat there, quietly assessed the situation, and then I handed everyone a post-it pad and a pen, and I said, I'm going to ask you 4 questions. And for each of these questions, I'd like you to write down as many answers as you can on separate post-it pads. I realized that this team had hit rock bottom and forgotten about their commitments. Yes, I could have done the old vision, mission, and norms activity, but these people seemed to have souls that were in search of direction. There was no way I was going to ask them to speak, and I was not qualified to referee whatever it was that had gotten them to this point. Instead, I thought I'd leave them with a gallery of what it was that they had in common and let them navigate to where they needed to be. Let them do the work, which is a little something I call bringing the problem to the problem. I could have shared with them all the things they needed to do, or I could make them see the problem that they had created and lectured them. But I didn't. Instead, each person had that fresh post-it pad and a new pen, so we had no excuses not to participate. I told the team that there were no limits for answering, and then I cleared a wall and said, I'd like you to bring up your answers up to the wall and not say anything to anyone. Just place your post-it pads on the wall under each of the following prompts. The first prompt I had for the team was this: what are we good at? That's right. What are we good at? Start at the base. Start at the positive. Start at our strength. So the entire group started writing out their perceptions. Each person had at least 10 post-it pads. They placed all of their answers up on the wall. I then picked who I guessed was the least engaged, and I asked him to group the feedback into categories quietly and then label the categories and sit down. The second prompt was, I am committed to... dot, dot, dot. And we redid the process, and this time, once all the answers were on the wall, I asked the one person who had made eye contact with me to put them all together. I nicknamed her Hope because that's what her nonverbals displayed to me when I walked into the room. Now, the third prompt: list our values as an organization. We once again redid the process of categorizing the post-its, and this time I asked the executive director to categorize them. Each prompt had no more than 4 categories when they were all categorized. There was very tight alignment within the team. It was evident to me at this point that there was nothing broken, just a lack of empathy for each other. I then described what I had seen that day and my complete astonishment that they could flip switches so quickly from one environment to the next. So to recap, I brought the problem back to the problem, and I baselined the entire team looking for them to review their collective commitments, which, by the way, are the absolute bare minimum that an organization or team should have. Their lists were comprehensive but simple. They were good at serving the neediest, collaborating with outside agencies for solutions, finding resources, and providing safety. Pretty awesome. They were committed to service, empowering, advocacy, and support. They valued care, empathy, safety, and service to others. I had once read that after having people do deep reflection, they should be released to absorb and further reflect so that they can grow forward on their own. Now, normally, I would have launched into the fourth question and gone into full-blown Buffalo cheerleader mode, but I took a risk. I kicked them out. Yep, I said, thank you guys for your time this afternoon. Enjoy your meal, but it's time for us to go. You are free to go, and I'm going to email you the last question tonight for you to reflect upon, and tomorrow I want you to come ready to do what you're committed to do based upon that prompt. There was general confusion, and the one person who had what I would call a resting angry face raised their hand and asked me a question. And I said, no, excuse me, we're finished. I thanked them, asked them to take pictures of the wall with their phones for reference, and go home. I walked out with the executive director when we were all done. We locked up, and I told her that I would be emailing her the final prompt. And then I shared with her what she needed to do when the team came back tomorrow. And when you have your noon debrief meeting, that she needed to lead the final part of the reflection. Here's why. I'm a guest and everyone can behave for a well-dressed and stunningly good-looking leadership coach. But when you leave grandma's house and start to fight again, it's useless in the absence of the people or person who created that compliance. I told her to listen to the answers that her team gives and start and work hard to create the conditions so that they could once again be a high-flying organization based upon what they were going to answer and what they were going to do different as a result of the prompt. This team loved what they did in their isolated roles during the day, but couldn't be with each other in a room. How sad, how depressing that human behaviors were reducing services for the neediest because of past slights. That people in service would put themselves first, but that is the reality of anyone when faced with emotional or physical survival. Leaders need to create conditions for safety. So I drove home and emailed the final prompt, and here it is. What do you need to do different in order to work in a highly collaborative organization? You've heard this type of prompt before on this podcast, but the only way to get change is for the individuals in the organization to address the change within themselves first. The deal is simple. Too often we think we can fix other people's problems. We fail to collect what it is we all share and focus on that. Instead of working to try to change people, we need to work within and work together to swiftly find opportunities for ourselves to get better. In situations like I just discussed, people depend on us, and we depend on each other. And if either of those links are not supporting the other, we're not operating at our best for anyone. As we continue to serve during COVID, we have to live week to week and sometimes day to day and hour to hour in order to feel successful and safe. As a result of conflict, and that when conflict emerges, we forget what our purpose is, what we value, and we question our talents. What we need to do is constantly remind others and ourselves what it is we are doing, what we are committed to, and how to get through it. I have so many friends in classrooms, hospitals, boardrooms, in the community who are wondering if they're doing a good job, if it's going to be okay, if they can make it through the week, and if they're valuable to the organization or their mission. As a leader, you need to create the conditions for others to be successful. Teachers need to do this with students, principals with teachers, lead nurses with all the staff, managers with subordinates, etc., etc., etc. People long for purpose. They're fueled by collective success and an understanding that tomorrow has the possibility to be better than today. As a result, you need to buffalo proactively and have those around you answer the four questions so that we can see what we are collectively able to do and what it is we are willing to change about ourselves. Bring the problem to the problem and stop trying to send solution to others. Baseline people with what it is that they are collectively committed to and make the people part of their own solution. Create conditions where people can safely participate, like quietly putting post-its on the wall, and then allow them for reflection. Kick them out. Face it, we're in weird times, and we as leaders, teachers, doctors, principals, executives, parents, neighbors, whatever, we need to take care of our stakeholders. But they don't always see it, because they're busy living and working. However, we have a responsibility to see what they don't, and that is the wear on the mind, body, and soul of week after week of uncertainty. Like the story of the nonprofit, we don't want to come out of the COVID tunnel, only to have survived it, and then go off the rails. So let's do some smart thinking. Describe how you could bring the problem to the problem. List collective commitments you have in the organization. Analyze those you serve and identify where you need to step in and provide renewed purpose by identifying shared commitments. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. As always, thank you for listening, and please make certain to share and rate this podcast. Also, thank you to the Well Pennies for their great music, and please, 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 please make sure to look for their newest LP being released October 30th. Brian and Sarah of the Well Penny sent me a song to preview for you. It's a great piece. It's a cover of one of Tears for Fears' classics, and it's a perfect fit for this episode. Lastly, I kind of messed with you there and didn't tell you how this all ended. In short, it ended well, at least for 5 of the 6. At the end of the next day of work, the executive director called me, and she was sobbing uncontrollably. I got to be honest, my first thought was, oh my gosh, Ted, you just destroyed a nonprofit. She took a breath and said, "Thank you." She went on to describe how everyone came prepared, and she did like I had coached her to. She started by sharing one of her Post-it pads and something she needed to do different. Her vulnerability and honesty led others to join in, and she said women and men were crying because they collectively recognized that they each went too far and were all responsible for creating the chilled environment. All that is, but one, who realized that he had been a driving force behind creating the tension and that he was unwilling to move past what he felt were too many slights. He said the one thing he needed to do different was to resign. And he did. The executive director asked me to come back monthly to coach and process, and I did. It was a beautiful experience for me, and we all learned together. As a matter of fact, I think I learned more than them, because all I had really done was share with them some processes. They had for too long been working with the victims of abuse and had failed to check in on themselves. They hired a new social worker, they regularly checked in on each other, and they got themselves back to being a high-performing team using processes, all of which are on other episodes of the Smart Thinking Podcast. A star in the sky is bright, but it brightens the closer you get to it, and you have to chase that star on occasion in order to brighten your own future. I did nothing for this group but introduce processes. They, like you, can do the rest, and all you have to do is follow the process. Let others lead and bring the problem back to the problem so that you have the ability to run into storms, the storms in front of you. Be Buffalo this week and look for the opportunity for those you serve to make collective commitments to each other and go and face the problem. We're going to come out of this stronger as long as we regularly recognize that we are on the verge of either insanity or greatness. And I believe with your help, we're all going to be great.
Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to. Holding hands while the